We're getting ready to celebrate Christmas and hope that you have plans that are you're just going to get to spend some time with people that you really love and care about and who love and care about you too, and that Jesus is at the center of your celebration. And you know, with that, I a lot of you, and I know because I've gotten your Christmas cards, thank you. We've been sending out Christmas cards and receiving them for a while. And we're going to talk about this for just a minute with Dr. Mark Eckel. He's president of the Comenius Institute. And it's been a little while. Mark, good morning and welcome back.
Oh, thanks so much. It's great to be back with you.
Hey, you know, just talking about sending and receiving those Christmas cards, I was telling Steve, we were discussing this a few days ago, just really kind of slowing things down at Christmas and taking a look at everything and making sure that we really focus on the true reason for this season that we celebrate, not getting caught up in everything else. And even with Christmas cards, you know, I think we can do that. And want to talk about the biblical basis for Christmas and Christmas cards. So what should we be thinking about with what we see on Christmas cards? Do they really matter? I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think they really do matter. And often they matter because they give us some wrong information. I think a lot of myths and falsehoods and exaggerations kind of cover greeting cards every December. Here are just a couple of these. Santa Claus, for instance, is actually based on a real person in church history. His name was Saint Nicholas. Jesus was not born on Matthew 25, on December 25th. Mary did not ride on a donkey. The inn was not Motel 6, but refers to someone's home. The stable was really a cave. The manger was a feeding trough for cattle, probably cut out of the cave's rock floor. And the three magi seems to be based solely on the number of gifts given by the wise men. So I think wrong information and outright fiction about Christmas arise from extra-biblical sources, even, frankly, from Christmas carols, such as Silent Night, for instance. We know for sure from Silent Night that all was calm and all was bright. It was not. So as we think about the culture and the context of the Christmas story, things are not necessarily as we think they are from Christmas cards.
Well, Mark, let me see. If the cards have that story wrong, maybe they present some wrong information, tell us then about the background of Jesus's birth.
Jesus' birth story reads more like a reality detective show, quite honestly. He was born, as we would say in our parlance today, out of wedlock. Unplanned pregnancy is putting it mildly. In addition to the stigma of supposed premarital sex, Mary gave birth while she was literally on the road. Obviously, the scripture is very clear about some of these things. The first witnesses of Christmas, for instance, were from the lowest rung of society. They were shepherds. And the people that should have been following the events most closely, that is, scholars, they didn't seem to care. Yet astrological signs made pagan sorcerers travel hundreds of miles to follow a star. So angels couldn't help themselves but exclaim. But then the bad guys show up, and the things get really interesting around Jesus' birth. So from the beginning, Jesus encountered threats against his life. The palace enlisted the aid of foreign intellectuals to locate the baby. And when outsiders outwitted the king, he dispatched shock troops to find and kill the child. And Jesus was being chased by a king who wanted him dead. And that's really an important idea here to remember that the family that Jesus was in narrowly escaped to a foreign country. Ancient prophecies were fulfilled. Joseph, the silent-type male hero who literally doesn't utter a recorded word in the Bible, is the action figure responsible for Jesus' safety. So from a human perspective, Jesus' entrance into the world could not have been more mismanaged, humanly speaking, or, frankly, more exciting. That's what I would say is really an important idea behind the context and culture of the Christmas story.
Yeah, I was reading an article the other day, Mark, just about things that we tend to get wrong about the Christmas story. And we've kind of accepted those things over the years without really looking into biblical truth and understanding exactly what did happen. We kind of sanitize everything and just make it something that it's not exactly. So I think it is good to take a look at what has really happened here. And in Matthew 2, that tells us that Jesus was being announced as King of the Jews. So then How did King Herod, who was an earthly king, obviously, respond to hearing that announcement? Because we know that was not a good story either.
Right, exactly. So when you read Matthew chapter 2, oh my, seriously, this is really a detective show. When you read this and you start in verse 7, for instance, you know, Herod summons the wise men secretly, and he wants to find out what's going on, you know, kind of behind the scenes, come into my office, you know, and tell me what's happening. And then, of course, they outwit him and don't tell him the real story. And then when we drop down to verse 16 in Matthew chapter 2, that's when we find out that Herod, when he saw that he'd been tricked by the wise men, became furious, and he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem and in all that region who were 2 years of age or under. And this was, of course, the ancient prophecy that was given out of Isaiah. So I think that's the backdrop that we need to remember about this, just for the details of it. I really do encourage everybody to go back and read Matthew chapter 2. But I did want to say something about this King Herod, because I think it's important for understanding the historic backdrop of who this person was. We have really no sense of living under the authority of insane, murderous despots in the United States, but quite frankly, that's exactly what was going on here in Matthew chapter 2. So, for instance, William Barclay, he's a New Testament commentator, he gave us a quick sketch of Herod the tyrant, and this is what he said. Herod was a master in the art of assassination. When Herod became king, he killed the Jewish Supreme Court without cause. Later, he had his wife murdered, then her mother, then all three of his sons. And in the hour of his death, he had arranged for the massacre of Jewish noblemen so that people would cry on the day of his death. It was said in those days, better to be Herod's pig than his son. And this is the true story surrounding Jesus' birth. Herod sent soldiers to kill the baby Jesus. Death and destruction were all around this issue of Jesus' birth.
Well, Mark, let me ask you, if we are going to be at the dinner table and we have people around us and there's an opportunity to share the gospel, how should this biblical background that we're talking about, the true versus this illustrated version of Christmas, make a difference in how we talk about Jesus' birth when we share the gospel with others?
Let me give five ideas here. Number one, I think it's important to remind everybody that this is a supernatural battle, that the attacks on Jesus didn't begin in Matthew, that the ruler of this world, our adversary, has shed blood repeatedly over the millennia to wipe out the messianic line. Number two, this battle can be traced all the way back to Genesis 3. Since Cain killed Abel, the ancient serpent has attacked relentlessly. We could talk about the Egyptian pharaoh who tried to wipe out the Hebrew boys in Exodus. We could talk about starvation and death that literally brought in the Gentile line into the Messiah's genealogy through Ruth. And then, of course, we could talk about Haman, who tried to wipe out the Jews and, of course, was stopped because God had a closet Jewess literally within the palace. Her name was Esther. So the battle can be traced all the way back to Genesis 3. This is an ancient story. Number three, I would say we shouldn't be surprised at the persecution of Christians. So when we see these kinds of things happening throughout history, as well as in our own day, we need to remember that this follows the pattern of the ages that has been instituted by our adversary. A fourth idea here is that I think we need to teach the sovereignty and providence of God on Christmas Day, and every day for that matter. Sovereignty means God's in control of everything, and providence means that he personally plans and oversees all events. Those two ideas are really crucial for us. And here's the fifth idea. And I think this is the paramount idea. The bad guys lose in the end. So if I'm going to follow through with my detective show, some awfulness happens, evil seems to triumph, but then the tables are turned, and the authority figure shows up, and the bad guys lose. And here's the crucial comment out of Scripture. 1 John 3:8 is a verse that really summarizes it all. 1 John 3:8, here it is. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the devil's work. I'll say that again. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the devil's work. We rejoice on this particular day and Christmas Day because the Son of God came to take care of the evil in the world, and we look forward to the anticipated coming and his soon return.
You know, Mark, as I'm listening to you talk about all of this and just about the death and the destruction that was all around, surrounded Jesus's birth and what Herod was about, it gives to me a greater definition of darkness. And we were talking about that earlier this morning when we began the program out of John chapter 8, when Jesus said, I'm the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. And they knew what this darkness was, and we've got it in our world too. But I don't think we realize it until we focus on the fact that he is the light of the world, and we bring our attention back to who he is and exactly what you just said, why he came. So I appreciate the conversation this morning.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. I love talking about these things. Always grateful for Moody Radio and all the good work that y'all are doing there.
Well, Mark, you and yours have a blessed Christmas, and we're going to be looking for some great Christmas shots of those grandbabies on Facebook, okay?
Thanks so much, Kelly. Blessings on the day.